G'day everyone and welcome to another DUC Migrating to Australia podcast. Wes Zant here and today I'm joined by Vic O'Neill. Vic is one of our migration agents. So Vic, welcome.
Hi, how are you going?
Good. Is this your first podcast, Vic?
Yes.
Yep. Awesome. Guys, this is an interesting podcast because Vic's a registered migration agent and she's got a little story to tell as well, but she's been a migration agent since 2006, has been with the DUC for a little bit now. So we just wanted to sort of talk a little bit about, I guess, the migration agent perspective of migration, journeys, changes along the way, what's good, what annoys you, Vic, what you're happy about. So before we do that, just give us a little bit about, you know, a little history about yourself. So, yeah, where were you born and everything like that?
So I was born in Sydney. My parents were actually 10-pound Poms. We then moved back to the UK when I was 2.5. We stayed there for a bit and then my dad got offered a job and we moved to Singapore when I was 8.
Cool.
So that was cool, but then we ended up getting sent back to boarding school in the UK probably when I was about 13. My sister was going to go for schooling reasons and I got sent because my parents got my school report and it said I didn't listen, so I think they sent me back.
Is boarding school, like, what's boarding school like?
I loved it. It's like having a sleepover with your mates every night.
But do you get, like, when do you get home to see your mates, like your friends and family?
I would see my parents every, like, holidays, so every, what, 3 months or so.
Hey, Vic, do Aussies have boarding schools? I don't know anyone who went to a boarding school.
Yeah, Aussies have boarding schools too.
All right, there you go. But it might have been like the UK thing.
No, so they have them here like for people who in WA, a lot of the kids board if their parents are like, you know, out further like regional and farmers and stuff, you get boarders. But, yeah, I loved it. I thought it was great fun. But you think back now, like we've got phones and stuff, somebody sends you a text, you don't reply, they send you question marks. You're like, mate, I got that 3 seconds ago. Back then when I was at school, phone calls were expensive. I was allowed to speak to my parents like every 3 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Obviously not about your report.
No. Normally it was them calling me saying, the teacher's been on again.
So, okay, cool. So you left school. How'd you end up in WA?
Okay, so I finished school, went to uni in Nottingham, moved back to Birmingham, worked there for a bit, met my then husband, now ex-husband, got pregnant with my eldest son, Harry. After I had him, my ex-husband actually said, why don't we go live in Australia? So because I was born here, I actually had an Aussie passport. I was very lucky. So I said, okay, well, do you want to go? And that was it. So I actually did my first spouse visa back then. My parents actually moved to Perth. My uncle came over back in the day and he never went home. He married an Aussie girl. And, yeah, so we just said, okay, let's go to Perth. And here we are.
Nice. And, okay, so you've got, you moved here when you're 28 and obviously Harry's drives a car now. I know that. So you've been here for a little while. You recently went back to the UK, you know, for, to see family and to, you know, to do things that have to be done over there. With that, I mean, how often do you get back to the UK?
So I haven't been back. I went back for my nan's funeral, which would be 8 years ago this Christmas, and that was the last time I went back.
Yeah, it's very common, isn't it? I think for people when you get settled, and I mean, you've been here for, you know, just how many years you've been here for now, living in WA?
So we moved 22 years ago. I moved 2 days after this September the 11th.
Okay. Nice, nice. Lots of interesting flights back then, I bet, after that. But It's kind of weird. We speak a lot about the pandemic, and you flew just after another, I guess, global.
Yeah.
Really,
people were like, you won't be able to get on the plane. I'm like, I'm getting out of here. I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing how quick things can sort of move on, I guess. And yeah.
And I moved, I moved to Perth. I came here when I was 21. And my parents were saying, because they were still in Singapore, they were going to move here. What are you going to do? And I said, you think I'm living in that place? Like, they wear funny clothes, they listen to funny music, not a chance. And here I am. I wouldn't go anywhere else, really.
Yeah. Oh, WA's, WA's awesome. All right, well, let's get into a little bit about WA then. So comparing WA to where you grew up in the UK and everything like that, you're growing up in a boarding school to having you've got three kids raising them in WA, you know, give us a bit of a rundown what that's like.
Look, WA, I think is, I love WA. I think we've got great weather. I love the beaches. I love the life. I actually, strangely enough, like the fact that where I live, because I've lived here for quite a while, I know people everywhere I go. And growing up sort of moving, I didn't have that, and I actually really like that. I love going to shops and, you know, knowing the people are in the shops. Sounds really silly, but that's what I like.
I think me and you share a bit of an interest in that. Like, it's nice to be social. I also like that where I live as well. It's good. It's good to talk to people.
Yeah, and I think, look, my kids, I think it's, you know, I think it's a good place to grow up. It's pretty cruisy, but I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. I would encourage them to go traveling, see the world, go do some stuff. Pretty sure my eldest will end up somewhere else. Perth's too small for him. But who knows with the girls. But
did you ever consider, you know, looking at their report cards, Vic, and sending them to boarding school?
Mate, every day if I could afford it, I would have done.
Every day. I love it. I love it. All right, Vic, so I want to get a bit of perspective of migration agents. So let's talk about the journey of you becoming a migration agent. You know, you processed a visa for your ex, and what happened? Light bulb moment, and thought this is an opportunity, you know, like what made you want to become a migration agent?
We moved over here. A friend of my parents was a migration agent. She had her own business, and she was looking for someone to do some, you know, admin roles and stuff. And I was like, I could probably do a few hours here and there. So I started doing that with her. And then the course to become an agent, which was the MapKey at that time, which was an online course, they decided they were going to stop doing that. So it was the last one back in 2006 that they did. And she said to me, look, I really think you should do it. And I will forever be grateful to her for making me do it.
Me too.
So I did the course, and it's funny, the night before the exam, so only 50%, I think, of people passed it because it was quite hard apparently, and I went to my parents' house the night before the exam and I said, right, Dad, test me. And he was asking me all these questions. He's like, wow, Vic, I'm impressed. This is the first time you've ever gone into an exam actually knowing anything. And I was like, thanks, Dad. And then
I mean, you enjoyed it, doesn't it? That's what it means. It means you enjoyed it, you understand it, and it's when that moment clicks that this is, you know, this is a career path that I'm going to enjoy. Because look, I can tell the listeners right now, I don't answer Vic's calls during the days because she is, me and Vic have a, you know, just talk forever, and it's very disruptive, Vic. We think we both agree, but it's the passion. It's the, you know, I've got to get this guy through, I've got to get this person through, and this person's done that, and you're straight to the point, which is what I like. But there is a passion that lies with you. And that's why it was such a warm welcome when you decided to, you know, to join the DUC and bring your brand with you, because you are passionate about it. So you do your course, you become a migration agent. Now, migration changes all the time. So how often do you need to, upgrade? How does it work? You know, upskilling, upgrading. How do you always become MARA registered?
Okay, so to be MARA registered, we have to do CPDs, continuing professional development. You've got to do a minimum number of points every year. But I'm also a member of the Migration Institute of Australia. I've been on the committee for, I don't know, 5-6 years now, which is great because it means that you can meet with other agents. A lot of agents work on their own and it can be really quite lonely. You know, if you need to find something out, it's like, who do you call? But I've got a pretty good network of agents that I can call on if I need to, just because I've been around for so long. Yeah, and it's just, yeah, you've just got to keep up with it. Things change. I just love all the stories I hear when clients ring me and say, oh, I've heard this. And I'm like, wow, were you in the pub again when you heard that? That's rubbish.
Yeah, no, it's different, isn't it? It's something that we'll address soon, I guess, is the word of mouth and the he said, she said, or maybe someone who migrated 20 years ago giving advice, you know, to new things.
And
you know,
it's like, completely changed.
It does change. And let's talk about that. So you've been a migration agent for a long time, okay? You're part of committees and everything like that. You know, it is your passion. It's become your life. You know, you are a career. You're very professional. You've got a wonderful reputation in this industry. What are the big, you know, big changes from when you first started giving migration advice to where we are now? Is there any? Is, you know, are they always looking for English-speaking skilled migrants on the skilled, and then you've got your sponsored visas, you know, your parents and your partners? Has there been any huge changes, Vic?
Look, with the visas I do, it's been, oh, that sounds a bit weird. It's been same but different. They just tweak things. It's like the points change or the amount of time you've got to be on a 482 before you can apply for an ENS, or, you know, the list will change slightly.
How do you know when it's changing? Because, okay, so let's go through this. So you're a MARA registered migration agent. So what does that actually mean?
Well, that basically, you have to be MARA registered to give advice in Australia.
Okay. I think that when immigration announce details and changes in policies and everything, do they say, okay, migration agents, you learn this for a week, we'll give you the heads up, or
no,
and then you guys look at the legislation and then, you know, deem it? Because I assume on the forums you're on and you're chatting with other migration agents, there's probably scenarios that would have, you know, that would be quite common where you might believe that a legislation means this and they might feel something different. So do they give you the heads up, or is it just, no, it's published, and then, yeah, how do you address that?
I don't actually really think we know before anyone else. Sometimes we might know, you know, we might hear things, basically because being on the MIA, I'm in touch with the national president of the MIA, and he's over everything. So if there's ever anything, you know, we hear, or, you know, he might give us a heads up on something so we're aware. But no, generally they tell us when they tell everyone. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is strange, isn't it? You think that they'll sort of say, hey, look, you're representing the industry. You know, you're the professionals in this industry. Let's get your input. Ask you input for changes? Do they speak to MARA or industry bodies with migration agents and ask, or does that happen?
So right now, as you know, we know they're talking about changing the 482 and the occupation list and stuff, and they have actually come out and asked for, you know, industry bodies to put in submissions, which I've been sending out to some of my clients, because you know, there are occupations they're talking about coming off the list. But if you look at, you know, some of the occupations they're talking about, you actually realise that I don't really think they understand the real world, because, you know, we've got occupations they're talking about which are on the WA list, which the WA government are giving money out to bring in because we're short, but then government talking about taking them off the list. So, no, I don't think they talk. And it's really frustrating.
We did a webinar on Tuesday last week with South Australia Government, and we interviewed them, and and we're going to do a podcast with them as well. They've been really good, SA Gov. But Vic, as you know, they're the people that grant the invites, the people that we're dealing with. When you put the EO in, they grant the invites. And I was hitting them up and sort of saying, look, why, you know, what's going on with the delays? The numbers got cut by 75%. And they, you know, and their reply was, they want as many people on, you know, with like good occupations. They want to bring them in. They're just as frustrated with immigration at the moment, I guess. But immigration dropping the numbers by 75% was meant that more visas were granted. Now, for me, you know, I live in our little world where skilled visas, sponsored visas, parent partner visas, you know, but there's hundreds of different visas. So yeah, there was a big backlog in the pandemic. So we're looking at it going, well, how come, where are these skilled visas being granted and everything? And South Australia, like, well, it's not just them, it's all these other visas. But they also have to, you know, meet with immigration. And this sounds so weird. Like, I guess this is why we're run by state governments and then we've got the federal government. But the states turn around and they're like saying to immigration, this is what my state needs to be more successful. We need all these occupations. And some of that, some of those occupations you mentioned, they talked about flagging, a lot of the occupations that the states want. So, but yeah, there was, what happened, about 350 or so, wasn't it, that were flagged?
There's a lot, and just some of them. Look, some of them I wasn't surprised at all. I can't believe they've been on this long. Others I was like, you've got to be joking. I actually sent it to one of my clients and he came back with, do these people live in the real world or what?
Your client being a migrant or your client being an employer?
No, being an employer. So I sent him the list. He came back and went, oh, great, I need this, this and this. I said, you didn't read my email properly. They're talking about taking them off. He went, what?
Yeah. It's crazy. Now, listeners, just be aware, like, where, you know, like when things are flagged, that's just, it's just a, it's a thing. And there's lots of flagged, you know, it does happen all the time. And when people say, oh, there's changes to the 482 or there's changes to like a, you know, I remember it was like, what was it, a 187 or something a while ago? Was it a 187?
The 187, yeah, that's gone.
187, then that became a 190.
No, the 187 went, the 18, yeah, so there was a 136, 137, that became a 189, 190, I think.
So the principles change. So the actual visa itself is really similar on those ones, like English speaking, school, you know, skilled people, skills assessment, English test, points based, but they change the numbers. And sometimes people get worried and think, oh, but they're changing the visas, I'm on that visa. What would happen, Vic? Let's say someone is on a current, like just for example, they're on a 190 visa and immigration says, no, we're getting rid of 190. Sorry, they're on a 491 visa, okay? Yeah. They've just arrived. That's the five-year visa, and after being here for 3 years, they can apply for PR. They arrive on a 491. They go, no, we're going to get rid of 491s. We're going to call a similar visa. We're going to call it a 49. Oh, God. Maybe
a 591 or something. Yeah.
What would happen? Nothing. Like that person's visa stays the same. It's just people applying for new visas will have the changes, correct?
Yeah, so that's the thing, the 482 to the 186 and the 491 to the now 191, I think it is. That pathway is still there. They can't, in my time as a migration agent, they haven't actually just gone, bad luck, we've changed that, you can go home. They leave the pathway to permanency open if they can.
Yeah.
They leave it open so that they can apply for, you know, the residency. But then obviously after a certain time that becomes inapplicable because the person, you know, no one's on that 491 anymore.
Yeah.
The pathway's still there. It just changes. So like with the skilled visas, when I actually started doing this, I think you needed 120 points, but you actually got 60 points for your occupation.
Wow.
So
occupation got 60 points back then, or was it just like
less? I think it might have been less. So it was like 60, maybe 50 or something. But then you got different points. But now it's 65, but you don't get points for your occupation. So it's the same. They just don't give you those points, but they reduce the points.
All right. So back then, if you're a plumber, you'd definitely get 60 points for being a legend. And if you're an electrician, you'd probably get about 0.3 points probably back then.
You know my plumber thoughts, Wes.
Oh, yes, I do. I do. Vic's had a run with a plumber at a house, and I've been, assisting where I can. But Vic, on the visas side, right, it's so many changes have happened and changes are happening. Numbers, you know, obviously we get lots of inquiries and everything like that, which is, you know, which is wonderful. But the need for people, it just feels like today alone, like what today's Tuesday when we're filming this and or recording it, whatever. But I've spoken
to Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday? Oh, there you go. There you go. I'm living in the past, proving that one. But yeah, I know you're throwing me off a little bit now. But I've spoken to three employers, you know, and we've got like we've got a plumbing company coming back to advertise with us again. They're screaming for plumbers, refrigeration mechanic. Now his is an interesting one because now I'm going to forget the name. What's an amazing part just by the sunny coast off Queensland where. Everyone goes there, Vic. Oh, my mind's gone blank now. Everyone goes there. Airlie Beach. He's like he's looking for fridges in Airlie Beach to sponsor and everything like that. And then we've got another electrical company in Brisbane looking to sponsor. So this is today. Like this is companies that are calling us today and they're needing it. Are you getting the feeling that we like Australia needs more people, but we're just not granting visas? Like is that?
I'm suggesting to a lot of my clients, so obviously, you know, like with WA's list shutting down, like the state list, we've got all tradies here and their visas are running out. You know, I've been suggesting you need to find a sponsor and go that way. You know, you can either do 482, 186, depending on where you're at. Finding employers are a lot happier to sponsor at the minute.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they need people, like desperate.
That's the debate, isn't it? It's the debate, and I really hope your listeners really don't, you take it what suits your family and everything. We get it all the time, Vic. We've got a client, you know, processing a skills assessment. Skills assessing bodies sometimes, you know, are taking, you know, longer than normal. Invites have been a bit slower due to, you know, the last financial year's cut of 75%. And we've got longer waiting times with immigration. So people are tempted to apply for, you know, for a 482 visa. But then obviously that's only a temporary visa. So depending on the state, you've got to pay school fees. There's lots and lots of pros and cons. I'm going to give you a scenario.
There are lots of things to consider.
I'm going to give you a scenario. And, basically, I'm quite close with Vic. This is just a general conversation, all right? So we're not working off any questions. So, Vic, if I'm giving you a few challenging questions and all that, we can just abort mission. Don't see how it goes. But I'll give you a scenario, right? So we talk about people lodging onshore, okay?
Yeah.
So someone's in the UK, for example. They've done a skills assessment. They've done an English test. Mm-hmm. They've decided to put in an expression of interest. They've got an invitation to apply. Now, they've decided to come to Australia on a tourist visa. Once in Australia, accept the invite. What would happen to them? So they're on a tourist visa. How long would they remain on a tourist visa before they could start work? Because this is a question we get all the time.
So if you apply for a 186, when your tourist visa expires, so at the end of that 3 months, you go onto a bridging visa.
Not 186, Vic. I'm referring to, like, let's say they put in a 190.
Oh, 190. Sorry, same thing. If you do a 190, you put in your application. Once your tourist visa expires, so 3 months after the day you get here, then you get you go onto a bridging visa. And you get work rights because you've applied for permanent.
And with work rights, does that also come with school, basically do you get the PR rights the visa you're applying for? Is that correct?
I think while you're on the bridging visa, no. Like the schooling's still a bit weird. So no, you don't.
Okay. Because we get it all the time where people come on these visas and it's good. Sometimes it works out, but so many, you know, I'll just be honest with you, there's lots of people that come down that pathway. 3 months is a long time to not be working and you don't want to sort of get caught working or risk anything and then, you know, and that's just something that you don't want to do. And it is. It's really hard. And then you've got, because I know that I just get where clients are coming from with this huge wait times at the moment. It's frustrating. And they're always looking to speed things up. My advice, listeners, is if you're going to do that pathway, just make sure you've got enough funds to deal with whatever happens in that 3 months. Because you calling us up saying, hey, but, you know, have you heard anything? Have you heard anything? I can promise you.
Well, if we did, we'd tell you.
Yeah, we, I think as a business, we want you to get invites, guys, because we only charge our fees in stages. So we want you to get invites. We want you to get your visa granted. We want you to be in Australia. We want you to use our relocation agents. We want you to fill our jobs with employers and everything like that. We want that, you know, just as much as you guys. Like, it's crazy. But I think sometimes I feel, Vic, that people are really trying to now push. It was like when the pandemic slowed migration down for a couple of years, and we're still got the ramifications off the pandemic. I think everyone blames the pandemic for everything these days. But definitely immigration, there's been delays with things. Do you feel confident that the financial year coming up that we're going to see more invites? I mean, I definitely do. I feel that the way that the calls that are coming through, we're just one migration business getting called all the time. You know, we're processing new sponsored visas daily. Because of the need. What are you feeling? Are you feeling that the states are going to be giving more invites and we're going to start seeing it back to what it was pre-pandemic?
Look, I've sort of heard two things. I've heard it might be a bit longer, but then I've heard it could be. We don't know until it happens. You know, it's what the government will tell us. You know, the one thing we say with the changes, when I started processing visas, you would literally get a request or a case officer would ring you and say, oh, you've forgotten to upload the, you know, UK police clearance, or you've uploaded it, but it's actually not the police clearance. And you go, oh, sorry, mate. Send them that thing. 2 minutes later, granted. Now, can you speak to anybody? No, because they've made it a faceless system. They don't want to be accountable or speak to us.
Yeah, I said this in the webinar we did with South Australia. I'm like, you know, like when we get clients call up and they'll speak to immigration, they'll get one answer from one person, call up the next day, and they've got a different answer from another person.
When people ring me and tell me they've rang immigration, I just say, well, that's time you're never going to get back in your life.
It is. It's hard. The amount of time we've rung them for the, you know, over the years, like, you know, chasing them up. And guys, this isn't us. I guess we're not sledging immigration people. We're grateful that they're in those positions, and we've got, like, we do as an Aussie. I think it's good to have a really good pathway for migrants to enter Australia. Like, I'm proud of that. If, you know, if we open the floodgates, and who knows what that can be.
We aren't doing that.
Yeah, it's a great thing. It's just, I guess when you. Vic, you asked me before, you're like, why do you put all your clients in one Facebook group, you know, when you first started with us? And I was like, because we can't, as you know, as advisors, I guess, of people with migration, no matter what they are, through skills assessments or visas and everything like that, the emotional side is what I think is just as bad. And with the delays and everything, clients need to rely on each other to feel that support.
I think the Facebook page is great. I love, you know, it's great seeing people asking questions. It just got to be wary. Everybody's situation is different. So what happened to one person, you know, they go, oh, my friend got this. Really? Well, they got that because of X, Y, and Z, not because they're the same occupation as you. I've got a 186 we're waiting on now. You know, nothing's been announced, but on the Migration Institute forum, we're talking about the fact that the 186 visas, like the NOMs are being granted, but the visas aren't, because apparently their places have been used up. So, you know, we could have 3 months of waiting till the new financial year again, but we haven't been told.
Yeah.
You know, and then the one girl said, oh, my friend got theirs in like 4 weeks. I said, yeah, what occupation were they? Nurse. I said, well, nurses are priority. Carpenters are not priority at the minute on that list.
Yeah. And then you look at it and you go, well, carpenters are more priority than other occupations. So it is very different. And I think that's not just our group on social media as a whole. Like, it's so good because usually people's intent is really, you know, I find most people want to help others, which is really cool. Yeah. But I guess for us, we get the, you know, it does come back on us. And it's even worse when you've got families spending lots of money and getting failed visas. And the advice was because they spoke to a complete stranger on Facebook who told them, you know, that they became friends with, told them this is what happens, this is how it was, and it doesn't work out for them. Obviously, there's cases where it does, which is kind of cool.
I see a lot, you know, we see a lot of posts where someone says, oh, you've got any recommendations for an agent? And then you get them going, just do it yourself. It's really easy. I'm like, yeah. And the amount of calls you get going, oh, I did this, but this is wrong, or I try, you know, because this is what we do all day, every day.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. It's hard.
I can work out someone's points in about 5 seconds if you give me the right information.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then it's also the eligibility. Like my thing, Vic, is I love asking people if they've been fishing before. And they'll always, you know, and they'll be like, pardon? Did you just ask? They'll think I'm a bit strange. And I'll be like, well, you know, think of immigration or like putting in an expression of interest like fishing. If you go fishing and you don't have a hook and bait at the end of the fishing line, you're not going to catch a fish. The whole purpose of putting in an expression of interest is to get an invite. If you're missing something on your invite, the states aren't going to say, hey, you know, you're missing this, just put it on.
They've got thousands.
Yeah, you're just waiting. You're never going to get it. And then age happens and time runs out. And, you know, I think with, like people are competing against, like it's funny, it's interesting. People are competing against other migrants to get points. This is the whole thing. But you are competing. I've got 70 points, I've got 75. We know that South Australia will say, well, you know, points are a big factor, but we're at the moment looking for more work experience. So if you're making less points because of your age, well, don't rule yourself out because we're looking for more work experience. Now, again, this is recorded on the 10th of the 4th, again, a Tuesday, not a Wednesday, 2024. So if you're listening to this, you know, 6 months down the line, things might change, but that's what they were saying. So, Vic, I reckon...
One of my clients was asking and I said, look, you've got 65 points, but I suggest you go and try and do the English test. And I think he thought I was being funny. He's like, but I'm English. I said, yes, I know you're English, but it's a points test. You get 10 or 20 points. Well, is this for like people who can't speak English? I'm like, it's not just about speaking. There's reading, there's writing. I think he thought I was just being patronising. I actually did the Pearson, no, not Pearson's. I did the IELTS test myself.
What did you get?
I actually got superior, thank the Lord, because I was never going to admit that if I hadn't. It was really hard.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's not easy. You got to learn how to it's not teaching you how to read, write, speak and listen again. It's teaching you how to pass. Vic, when we partnered with PTE many years ago, offering discounts for our clients, I actually asked PTE if we could do tests for my staff in the office.
Yeah.
And then I realized who I was up against and I kindly declined it thinking I'm so going to get the lowest score with this. And we got some sharp. There's an old rule, always hire people that are smarter than you, and that was quite easy
The writing. You have to write a letter. When did any of us ever actually write a letter? You don't. You type your letter, you walk away, you come back, you edit it, relook at it. You don't have time to do that in the test. It's not you know, real, but it's what you do to get points.
Let's do it. Okay, so we've spoken a bit about changes. We've spoken, you know, we're just obviously just chatting away like me and you do, I guess.
The other thing, like you're saying, like with the pandemic and stuff and how that's affected everything, like parent visas, like contributory parent visa was being processed in about 4 years. Now we're talking... I don't know, 10, 14 years or something, because everybody wants their parents to come over.
Yeah, of course. We love them.
The amount of applications is huge, you know, and so it's now you've got to look at coming over here and applying here, because what is the point at the age of, you know, 64 sitting in the UK for 14 years? Wait a little bit and come on shore and do it. It's just working out the best way for people, you know, to do things really.
Oh, it's just experience, isn't it? That's what it is. But look, the joys of being a migration agent, I mean, it must be so fulfilling. I know, mate, that I do this job for that little sense of fulfillment. I love what I do. I love when, Like, I love catching up with people on the podcast now. Like, I don't even, yeah. Anyway, it's really good. What about yourself? Like, you know, what's your favorite thing apart from the obvious calling people and telling them their visa's granted? But what do you enjoy most? Is it a challenging case? Yeah. What do you enjoy?
No, I don't like challenging. It's too hard. I'm too busy. No, I like, look, I've met some great people through, you know, a lot of my clients. Like, I did a lot of charity things a few years ago, did a few skydives. I actually have my clients jumping out of planes as well. You know, I've got clients now from, 12 years ago that still recommend me. It's a fulfilling job. You know, you basically change someone's life.
Yeah, it is. That's cool. And I love how they react. Like, it's so... Yeah, those special moments that that people go through. It's really
good. I mean, I was talking to one of my clients yesterday, who they've come over, they're on a sponsored visa, and they're in Queensland, but they want to come, you know, eventually they want to move to WA. You know, I was chatting to them yesterday. They're coming over, I think, for a holiday, and I think, WhatsApp last night, like, where's the best place to stay? And I'm like, well, I'll see if I can work it. Maybe you can just come and stay at my place for a bit, you know, come for the week, like I did at your house, Wes. I know, couldn't get rid of me. I don't know, it's just a great job. I like, and the other thing I like is when you know, someone comes to you and they go, oh, I've got this, and you look at it and you go, that's not the best path. If you do this, it will be so much easier or quicker. Or
you are good at that. One of your things, and I think that just comes down to experience and just knowing how the migration law goes. And that's what's important. You know, at the end of the day, people want the result. They want, you know, what's the intent of what they're trying to do? And you can go around in different ways, spend more money, do it longer, or if you can get straight to it, that's the result.
It's like, I think resident return, you know, people who've been over and been permanent residents. If you come over with your family and then you go home, you never come back, you've got no ties. But, you know, for those people who've come over and maybe gone back for whatever reason, parents were dying, pandemic hit, couldn't get back, you know, there are still options to get that residency back if you can, you know, if you've got ties here. And I love, that's one of my favorites. I love that one.
Yeah, it's cool, that one, isn't it? Yeah, there's so many visas. There's so many different types of visas. Now we've got like this big range of migration agents that are all specializing in different visas. And it's really cool. Like, it's great for the business, but it's really interesting. Like, I live this company day in, day out. Like, I live this industry, and so do you. That's what's it about. I mean, you know, you've got three kids, I've got three kids. We might talk about them for a tiny bit, but usually it's about a scenario or a case or a situation that you've been a part of where you've been able to help someone. And I know at the moment, all the employer-sponsored visas at the moment, it's hard, isn't it? Like, when I say hard, it's like it's good, but there's a lot of them. So it is hard to, I think, for sometimes when you're dealing with migrants and everything, what we always have to do, Vic, is remember that this is the biggest moment of many of their lives, like it was for you when you and your, you know, you and your ex, whatever, came over back in 2000, you know, like, you know, years ago, 20 odd years ago. That at that time was a huge, you know, Harry was, you know, your son was only young, well, not even born. Was he born?
He was 9 months old.
Yeah, so
no, he was born in Birmingham.
In Birmingham. So that's the these are the challenges, like, that everyone faces, and we ride those emotions, like the good and the bad. We're just grateful we don't get, like, you know, unsuccessful visas, but that, you know, the waiting and everything.
There are cases, Wes, where, you know, there will be visas refused, and or, you know, there's a situation that happens in, you know, something. And I literally, there's days when I'll open my emails and I actually just want to, there's something there and I'm like, oh, my Lord. And I just actually want to vomit. Like, I
feel like an immigration error.
Yeah, or just something where, you know, somebody hasn't told you something, or, you know, you've got to fix a problem or whatever. But you live their journey as well, you know.
Yeah.
We don't assess people or say to people you can get a visa if you can't. What's the point? It's not going to benefit us. We're only going to tell you can come over if at the time you meet requirements. Yeah.
Well, it's simple, isn't it? If you're coming on a skilled visa, you have to have the necessary skills to be the skills assessment, points to have a chance to get an invite. If you're coming on a sponsored visa, you've got to have an employer, and you've got to have, you know, and obviously you've got to hit the requirements too on, you know, on those ones, I guess, ones we deal with mainly. What's your best, I mean, you spoke a bit about like helping people with RRR visas and trying to retrieve more information and follow the history of them and everything like that. What would you say is, I guess a PR visa is just like the standout best visa for everyone. Is there a certain visa that you really enjoy processing, or an occupation you really enjoy processing?
I actually love dealing with my tradie clients, especially the UK ones, because I just love UK banter. I got some great clients. And
yeah, we do.
Yeah, there's there's none that I, you know, everyone's good, but I love, like, I remember someone coming to me, they'd been to three other agents, couple of lawyers or whatever, and she was looking at a parent visa, and she was here with her son. They were chatting, and I didn't actually realize he was born here. And then I was like, well, hold on, if you were born here, where was your mom? Oh, yeah, obviously she was here. Went on to the National Archives, found her PR card back in the day, and guess what? Got her a resident return, saved her about $50,000.
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it?
You know, and that is like, those are the things that I just love.
Yeah, no, it's good. The life of a migration agent, it's weird. It's like, I guess, a carpenter saying everyone plays a carpenter, but if you're a really good builder and carpenter, you know. And I think, Vic, you know that you're very good at what you do.
And
obviously people, no, you are. You know, hats off to you. You play down a little bit, but, you know, I'm really grateful for all the stuff that you've done with our clients and everything. So, guys, I hope you enjoyed this this podcast. It was more of a sort of just get a bit of an agent's point of view, because sometimes we focus a lot on the clients, and it's interesting, you know, for me anyway, it's interesting to hear what it's like. And we wish you all the best in your journey to Australia. Anything you would like to add?
Look, I think Australia is an amazing place. There's so many different states you can go to. You know, it's what, we're middle of autumn, we're still going in the pool, going to the beach. I wouldn't trade my life for anything. For those who are on the journey, I hope it all goes smoothly. I wish you all the best. And, yeah, let's have a DUC meetup when people are here and share our happy stories.
Just quickly, like, yeah, those meetups we do in WA are good, I think, to get to meet new people. But, guys, look, thank you so much for listening. And also, Vic, thanks so much for your time. And that was the life of a migration agent. We'll see you on the next one, guys. Thank you very much.
Take care. See ya.